www.ifr.org/en.
That lines the U.S. Embassy in the United Arab Emirates advises American citizens there to maintain a high level of security awareness following retaliatory attacks by the Yemenis. Russia accuses the U.S. and its NATO allies of escalating tensions after the military alliance said it is boosting forces in Eastern Europe amid standoff over Ukraine. And Iran says it has regained its UN voting rights that were prevented as a result of non-payment of its contribution caused by U.S. sanctions. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The Yemeni army says it has launched a massive retaliatory operation against Saudi Arabia and the UAE, the two allies waging a war on the country since 2015. It says vital and sensitive targets were accurately struck with drones and missiles.
They targeted the Safra airport. They also hit the Abu Dhabi airport with a big number of ballistic missiles, Zulfiqar. They targeted facilities in the area of Dubai with a big number of drones and unmanned planes of Samad 3. Also, several military posts in the heart of the Saudi area, in the area of Shobra, and other Saudi towns with a great number of Samad 1 unmanned planes and also artillery fire. They hit very sensitive areas in Jazan and Asir, also with a big number of ballistic missiles.
Sari said the Yemeni army would continue its retaliatory attacks and respond to escalation with escalation. He also warned foreign firms and investors to leave the UAE as the country is insecure and will be targeted as long as it continues its aggression against Yemen. Saudi Arabia and the UAE have both confirmed the retaliatory strikes, but said they intercepted the ballistic missiles. The attacks come just a week after Yemeni forces struck several targets inside the Emirati soil using drones and ballistic missiles. The strikes are part of the reprisal attacks over the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen, which has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and plunged the country into the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. The U.S. Embassy and its consular mission in the United Arab Emirates have advised Americans there to, quote, maintain a high level of security awareness. The embassy's website posted the statement following retaliatory Yemeni attacks on the UAE capital, Abu Dhabi, and its commercial hub, Dubai, earlier today. The statement urges U.S. citizens to take appropriate steps to bolster their personal security. The American embassy issued a similar alert last week when the UAE was targeted by Yemeni missiles and drones. The strikes are part of the reprisal attacks over the Saudi-led war on Yemen, in which the UAE is an active partner. Activist and political commentator Hussein Al-Bukaiti says the UAE has been playing a destructive role in Yemen, but should now think twice before continuing those actions.
The role of United Arab Emirates in Yemen has been so bad and so damaging and so destructive against Yemeni civilians. They are trying to separate Yemen. They are using Al-Qaeda and ISIS to fight with their troops against Yemeni army. Most of the crimes and the big attack that has happened against Yemen is conducted by United Arab Emirates fighter jet. And it was clear now the effect of the attack today against United Arab Emirates, that most of the stocks and in United Arab Emirates has fallen, and we have seen that flight companies has cancelled their flight to Dubai and to Abu Dhabi during the attack, and this is exact proof that those missiles has reached their target. I mean, of course, maybe they gonna shoot one or two ballistic missiles, but as Mr. Sariq, the spokesperson, have said, a large number of ballistic missiles has targeted Abu Dhabi, and a large number of drones has targeted as well Dubai. And this latest attack shows that Yemeni army is well equipped to launch many attacks, either north of Yemen against Saudi Arabia, like they did today, with a large number of ballistic missiles and drones against military sites and sensitive sites in Sharura, in Najran, in Asir, in Jaizan, and as well in Dubai and in Abu Dhabi. And the war in Yemen has actually strengthened the Yemeni army. They has Yemeni army start to develop and to make new type of weapons, new drones, and there are still some ballistic missile and some drones that have not used yet. They have been tested and they are equipped with a larger warhead. And I think that United Arab Emirates, they should be really careful to target Yemen from now on.
The standoff between the West and Russia over Ukraine is spiraling into unpleasant scenarios. Moscow is accusing the U.S. and its NATO allies of stirring up the situation through, quote, information hysteria. The Kremlin also warns of the high risk of offensive by Ukrainian troops against pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine. That after NATO said it was putting forces on standby and reinforcing deployments to eastern Europe. The Western Military Alliance also said it would continue to take all necessary measures to protect and defend all allies. Some members of the bloc have already sent ships and warplanes to the area. The West claims Russia is preparing to attack on Ukraine, which Moscow denies. The European Union now says it is drawing up a multi-billion-dollar aid package for Ukraine.
First of all, the Commission proposes a new emergency macrofinancial assistance package of 1.2 billion euros. This package will help Ukraine now to address its financing needs due to the conflict.
Von der Leyen added that the 27-nation bloc stands by Ukraine. Meanwhile, U.S. media reports suggest Washington also weighs deploying thousands of troops, as well as warships and aircraft to NATO allies in Eastern Europe and Baltics. However, a Russian lawmaker has warned Moscow would respond appropriately if the U.S. deployed more troops along its border. The U.S. has already delivered two shipments of its military aid to Ukraine as part of a $200 million package it approved in December. Washington and London also are withdrawing some embassy staff and their families from Kiev. The EU, however, says it will not follow suit. Moving on, Iran's UN ambassador Majid Takhravanchi said that the country has regained its voting rights at the world body after fully paying its dues that the country was unable to pay due to U.S. sanctions.
We have already paid our dues, contributions to the United Nations. This has been going on for some time now. Unfortunately, the U.S. Illegal sanctions against Iran have prevented us from paying our contributions on time. But we have been working on this issue for some time now with the UN Secretariat, with the South Korean government. And finally, we have made it, and we have succeeded in sending the money to New York from Seoul. It took some time, but it happened the other day. Now the money has already been transferred to New York, and the paperwork are being done now. And the letter that is needed to be sent to the General Assembly will be issued shortly. Iran, as an active member of the United Nations, is cognizant of the fact that it has responsibility, it has rights, and we are attentive to our rights and responsibilities. And we have always paid our contributions to the United Nations on time. Unfortunately, during the last 2 years, that has not been possible because, as I said, due to the U.S. sanctions, we could not do it on time. We have been capable of paying our contributions to the UN financially, but the sanctions prevented us from doing so. Last year it took some months to pay. This year it's been rather it has taken a few weeks, but finally we were successful in arranging the necessary things, and we made.
Meanwhile, Iran says it has never accepted any preconditions for talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has not accepted any preconditions since day one and will ignore these matters being brought up as if they are for internal and press matters. Otherwise, Iran's definitive message has been that the negotiations are complex as is, and we should not exacerbate these true complex statements.
The foreign ministry spokesman says Tehran is seeking an agreement that is sustainable and reliable with full guarantees. Hatibzadeh made the comments in reaction to the latest remarks made by U.S. Special Envoy on Iran, Robert Malley. On Sunday, Malley said the U.S. was unlikely to strike an agreement with Iran to save the JCPOA unless Iran releases four American citizens that Washington claims are being held hostage. Hatibzadeh downplayed his remarks as being made for domestic use, saying that the American prisoners in Iran are facing clear convictions. Now the UK High Court allows WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to appeal a decision to extradite him to the United States over espionage charges. The decision is the latest in Assange's long battle to avoid trial in the U.S. He can now file a plea to the UK Supreme Court against the lower court ruling on his extradition. Meanwhile, his fans gathered outside the Royal Courts of Justice in central London and welcomed the decision. American authorities are seeking the 50-year-old Australian over the publication of classified documents related to U.S.-led wars on Iraq and Afghanistan. If extradited to the U.S., he could face up to 175 years in jail. Assange was arrested after the Ecuadorian embassy in London revoked his political asylum in 2019. He was holed up there for 7 years. Now, Richard Medderst is a journalist and political commentator. Earlier, he joined us with his take on the UK High Court's ruling on a WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange.
He's facing a daunting, terrifying sentence for, you know, publishing evidence of war crimes, crimes against humanity. I mean, it's some of the most important journalistic work of the last decades, without a shadow of a doubt. And today, you know, what was... The High Court essentially denied permission to appeal, which is normal. They always do this, because if they had accepted it, it's basically like the High Court judges are saying, well, we don't know what we're doing, go to the Supreme Court. However, at the same time, they allowed one point of law to be certified. Basically, Assange applied for three. They denied two of them, but they allowed one to go ahead, and that's all he needs to be able to go to the Supreme Court. So he has 14 days to apply now, and the Supreme Court could take a while to answer, and it's not guaranteed that they will hear the case. I think it's likely they will, and it's a very important thing for Julian Assange that he's able to take this to the Supreme Court. It's just a shame that the crux of the issue, press freedoms, the fact that the United States would torture him, these things are not really being discussed anymore. It's more of a legal technicality that's being discussed. And I feel that it should be much, much bigger than that.
Now, moving on, the French military base in northern Mali has come under a mortar attack. Military sources have attributed Saturday's attack to suspected militants. At least one French soldier has been killed in these attacks. France is reorganizing its military presence in Mali after nearly 9 years of presence in the Sahel region. Under this plan, Paris would almost halve the number of its personnel in the Sahel from 5,000 currently by next year. Relations between the two countries have been strained since 2020 and the coup that happened back then in Mali. Local officials want French troops to leave the country. There have also been public protests demanding the withdrawal of the French military. For more on that, we're joined by Etunde Usazwa, from the Africa, an Africa team member, actually, from the Black Alliance for Peace, who was joining us live right now. Now, thank you very much. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name, but if you could please tell us more, shed more lights on the different aspects of France's presence in Mali and everything that's been happening so far.
Yes. So France has been committed to, you know, preserving its domination of its former colonial empire. And so they use the perception that so-called terrorist groups threaten the stability of corporations and their operations, the operations of those corporations, to as a pretext to intervene. And the military forces are often deployed to protect those operations. So that military base is an important installation to serve those ends and protect the interests of those corporations, whether or not the African people or you know, states like it. So I think, you know, it's important to understand that threat of terrorist, you know, activity, terrorist attacks, is actually often worsened by the presence of French forces and, you know, United Nations forces. And so, you know, references to Al-Qaeda or ISIL kind of, you know, serve to protect the interests of France, while, you know, even exploiting age-old tensions among various ethnic communities and tapping into deep-seated local grievances. So, like you mentioned, right, like many Malians believe that the Western presence doesn't really have any purpose other than protecting, you know, the exploitation of raw materials, and French policy in Mali is decried because, you know, it's considered neocolonialist by, you know, many observers and even some authorities, some politicians, local officials. So I think, you know, what we see now is that, you know, the French are looking to kind of bring troops out. And what we've seen in the past is that, you know, when African governments decide to negotiate truces and begin dialogue with militant forces that, you know, are deemed terrorists, what we see is that, you know, when those truces are in effect, there's a dramatic decrease in the number of deaths. You know, in one region, in West Africa, you know, civilian deaths decreased from 65 in the first quarter of 2020 to 26.
Thank you very much. Mr. Asuza, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, live from Atlanta, from the Africa, an Africa team member, actually, from the Black Alliance for Peace. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Many women who have reached a level of freedom and education in Iran are afraid that they will be forced to return a reactionary religious regime. What have you to say to put their minds at ease? Imam replies, Islam has given women freedom. It is this government and this Shah that have deprived them of freedom and have restricted them in every aspect. January 5th, 1979.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. This is your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi. We are with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the search of Islam in this program. The part of the speech that we have today, in this part Imam Khomeini has said that we want Islam to rule and Islamic decrees to be implemented in this country. Now, we know that Imam Khomeini was the leader of Islamic Revolution and he overthrown the kingdom of the Pahlavi family, and therefore he took over with the revolution when he had the country in his hands. He said that we want Islam to rule and Islamic decrees to be implemented in this country. Means that no matter whoever comes, he must follow the Islamic rule. He must implement the Islamic decrees. He must be the one who thinks about Islam, who gives importance to the Islam in his life. The Islam has a big role, basically, in his character, in his life, in his leadership. So basically, no matter whether it is the Imam Khomeini himself or someone else, the main point is, in this country, the revolution was done in order to have the Islamic decrees, in order to have Islam, and in order to have the ruling of Islam over this country. Country which has the Islamic ruling in it, it must have justice in it, because according to the teachings of the Quran, the Quran emphasizes on the justice for everyone. And this is what Islam actually is about. We can see there are many Islamic countries, many, many Islamic countries like in the East, but they do not have Islam ruling those countries. But still, there is a dictatorship, there is a capitalism, there is other kinds of system that are ruling those countries. Islam is not ruling. Yes, the ruler may be the Islamic. The president or the ruler or the king may look someone who is a Muslim, but it is not Islam. Therefore, Imam, in the very first days of the revolution, has emphasized that, remember, that if you do revolution, if you are a Muslim, let Islam rule the country, not the people. Because if people will rule without following the Islamic rules or decrees, then obviously there will be injustice, there will be the problems that we can see in today's world. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
The US dollar has remained the world's top currency when it comes to trade, but its standing is increasingly coming under threat. Countries like Iran, China, and Russia are giving it a run for the money. But will they be successful? I know we have covered this topic before, but this edition of Economic Divide will definitely have some surprises for you. Coming up in this program, we will take a look at the Russia-China alliance to dethrone the dollar. They will decrease trade in dollars, and at this point, the dollar use between the two has fallen below 50% in terms of the greenback's bilateral trade value. Next, we will take a look at Iran's push for de-dollarization, a sweeping economic and security partnership deal with China billions of dollars of Chinese investments in energy and other sectors, and also one with Russia. And finally, we will take a look at the dollar and central banks. The dollar reserve currency is on the decline, as the global reserve currency of central banks in terms of the dollar amount has declined to 59%. That's the lowest level in 25 years. Iran's push to break away from the dollar began a long time ago, but it has gathered steam with the current administration headed by President Ebrahim Raisi. Enhanced cooperation with neighbors has been at the forefront of President Raisi's foreign policy, and that puts the economy at the left, right, and center. His trip to Russia is meant to cement ties. Remains to be seen whether the 20-year agreement between the two countries will be signed or not. This deal covers political, security, military, defense, and economic cooperation. Iran's economy has been picking up steam recently. The value of Iran's non-oil trade with its neighbors stood at $36.8 billion during the first 9 months of 2021. That is a 42% increase year on year. So significant that it has placed a strain on Iran's infrastructure, like its transport sector. Iran sees it as a necessity to eliminate the dollar from its bilateral trade with these countries. The current trade with Russia takes place in national currencies. Another example, Turkey. 30 to 40% of trade is also done in national currencies, with the rest in euros. Major export destinations of Iranian non-oil goods were Iraq, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Russia, to name a few. Iran has also laid the groundwork for its other mega deal to take place, namely the 25-year cooperation agreement with China, aimed at strengthening economic and political ties. Iran just announced that its agreement has entered an implementation stage. The agreement was signed last year and includes economic, military, and security cooperation.
In this trip, we agreed to start implementing the 25-year Comprehensive Strategic Cooperation Agreement. I also delivered a written message from our president to his Chinese counterpart, Mr. Xi, to implement the agreement.
U.S. sanctions imposed in 2018 bar trade using the dollar system, limiting Iran's ability to conduct imports and exports, slowing its economy further on top of a ban on oil exports. Okay, our social media section is here, and we're going to take a look at how countries like Russia and China and Iran are steering away from the dollar like never before. It's actually a process that has been going on for quite some time. A top advisor looking at this particular tweet of the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, has made that issue very clear. China and Russia should avoid using U.S. dollars in financial transactions to minimize Washington's ability to bully other countries into following its rules with the threat of sanctions. Danny says the de-dollarization of the world will no longer be a legend or a dream. Soon it will come. Now, he says only the global digital currency is the leader and rulers of the world currency in the real future. Now, speaking of the global digital currency, here we have Russia and China, who are keen to cut their dependence on the U.S. dollar for some time. They are close to establishing what they announced, a new system for direct yuan ruble settlements. This will then help countries like Iran in their push for de-dollarization. But things are moving quickly. First, the Iranian foreign minister visited China to make sure the infrastructure is in place for Iran-China for their 25-year pact, of which they did, and they announced the implementation stage for this.
During today's meeting, we talked about industrial, scientific, technological, and economic areas, as well as tourism and other subjects that are covered by the 25-year agreement.
And this may explain why Iran's president will be going to Russia to cement the 20-year agreement with Russia. It's a high-level trip in which Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, was invited by Vladimir Putin personally to come there. Now, as of the recording of this program, the visit will be taking place, which we will be covering next week. All right, let me introduce our guests for this section. We have the pleasure of having Masoud Barat joining us here in the studio. Thanks for coming, an international affairs analyst and a sanctions expert. So it's a pleasure to have you. And also we have Dmitry Zolotarev, a journalist and foreign policy analyst. Welcome to you both. Dmitry, I'm going to start with you. We're looking at Iran gearing up to do trade without the dollar. Shouldn't say gearing up. It's doing that. It's already in motion. And you have countries like Turkey, for example, that Iran does trade with, non-dollar trade up to a certain percentage, and establishing this China-Iran strategic partnership deal along with one with Russia. Tell us what you think about that and what additional moves Iran needs to make in order to de-dollarize.
Well, Iran is making right steps and good moves to move away from the dollar. I think, first of all, Iran should build more close economic relations with Russia. Because I tell you why. Because Russia is a good friend, actually, a loyal country to its friends, and always holds to its word. So, which is very important. I'm not talking sentimentally. I'm talking looking back to Russia's history, and this doesn't matter which regime is currently right now in Russia, communist, Tsar, or today's political structure. So Russia, I think, is the most reliable economic partner for Iran.
All right. You heard there from Dmitry Zolotarev. Masoud, tell us the relationship between sanctions and de-dollarization.
After the September 11 attacks, the U.S. proceeded to use its economic advantage, especially when it came to its banking sector, thanks to the status of the U.S., dollar being a world reserve currency used in world trade and world banking transactions. It used that to what is called the weaponization of the dollar. And this is what we hear a lot, that the U.S. has weaponized the dollar. And after 2001, when it began using the Patriot Act and began then using the dollar as a weapon, it sent out a message to other world countries such as Russia and China that something is happening. There is a change happening in the way the dollar is used. So they proceeded to devise ways to soften the impact of the dollar used as a weapon. The Islamic Republic of Iran became the target of the cruelest U.S. sanctions. An enormous volume of sanctions were leveled against Iran by weaponizing the dollar, which was unseen in history. Therefore, Iran has a vast amount of experience in being targeted this way. And as such, it can complement other big economies in the world that fall prey to U.S. dollar weaponization.
Very good. Thank you for that. And we're going to come back in our next section in depth to talk this a little further with you. Time now for our info news section of the program. By the way, we had so many suggestions that came from you this past week, so I'd like to take this time to thank you for that. It really helps the flow of the program. Well, first up, the U.S. and its oil reserves. It has diminished by a fifth. That's according to the latest. And this means that the U.S. used, according to the latest reports, 8.4 billion barrels. This was meant to keep the price of petrol low. However, that really didn't pan out the way the U.S. wanted to. It had a friend at OPEC, it thought, Saudi Arabia, but it did not come to its rescue. Additionally, throughout the year 2020, just 3 billion barrels of crude oil reserves were discovered in the U.S., so that's not good news for the U.S. Next up, U.S. inflation. Consumer prices, they have surged by 7% over the past year. Housing and food prices have continued to soar, but something even worse could happen. Prices rising as the economy slows. And that is the textbook definition of stagflation. For a definition check, here is stagflation in case you don't know what it means. On to the UK economy. UK economy bounced back from COVID shock At least that's what it was, according to the latest, indicating 0.7% increase. I don't know if you can call it a bounce back. But Omicron has slowed down the economy. After a V-shaped recession, variant's impact will put the brakes on, with a double whammy that's due in April. That's what analysts are saying. So the UK economy looks like it's going to slow down based on the latest wave of Omicron, which has hit that country pretty hard. Countries across Europe, actually, are experiencing the same. And then Africa's economy. Growth recorded in the second half of 2021. That's because the vaccines were being available. The vaccine hoarding was done already, making that available. It's really sad at the same time how promising this is, because you had, when the vaccines were available, the growth started to appear, and you had sub-Saharan Africa, for example, recording a growth of 3.5%. Just imagine if the countries that hoarded the vaccine made it available earlier. Okay, that's all for this InfoNews section. The stories were all the ones that you sent to us.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Trade without using the dollar, de-dollarization. Is that even possible? Well, that's a question that has been floating around for a while. I'm sure, or maybe most may have heard about this. But the challenge, the petrodollar system. Now, what is this system? Well, a petrodollar is a U.S. dollar that is received by an oil producer in exchange for oil. Today, all global oil transactions are settled in U.S. dollars. Now, there are advantages to that for the U.S. in many different ways. In essence, it's actually something that the U.S. reaps twice. It receives a double loan out of every global oil transaction. So, first, oil consumers, they're required to purchase oil in U.S. dollars. And then, the second advantage, the excess profits of oil-producing nations are placed in U.S. banks. Basically, these are government debt securities that are held in these banks. Got that? So that's how the U.S. reaps these benefits twice. Now, let's look at China, the world's top oil importer. Well, China is not happy about oil being sold in dollars. It sees it as the only logical that oil should be actually priced in its own currency, the yuan. And what it has done, it wants that currency, the yuan, to be gold-backed. So at least this way, you have something that secures it, because with the dollar, it's not that way. Now, in order for China to reach this goal, it needs to ask other countries to actually trade in oil. So we're looking at how this would involve countries like Iran and even Saudi Arabia. This would create the new petro yuan and then weaken the dollar significantly. Again, these are all under the umbrella of moving away from the dollar, or de-dollarization. China sees moving away from the dollar as a necessity and a priority to reduce the dependency on the dollar, and it wants to limit its exposure to U.S. currency risks in order to shield it from U.S. sanctions, which is another reason why it wants to move away from the dollar, along with other countries that it does trade with. Now, if China is successful, the world could end up trading oil primarily through gold-backed currency. Now, isn't that something to look forward to? Well, here you have a question. Could U.S. sanctions and closer West Asia ties fuel the rise of China's petro yuan? That can happen when China secures long-term energy deals with West Asian nations in order to increase the international use of the currency. And of course, the use of petro yuan has gained traction as Russia and Iran, which are subject to U.S. sanctions, look to limit the dollar exposure. Let's discuss this a little bit further. Dmitry Zolotarev is a journalist and a foreign policy analyst who rejoins us for this. Dmitry, welcome back. So Russia moving against the dollar, we know that. It has adopted a credit card, actually, in one of its moves, and it also is involved with BRIC countries. You have the fact that Russia has announced a financial payment system with China in which the infrastructure is set in place. Do you think that by Moscow and Beijing joining forces, they will be able to bypass the U.S. dollar as they have promised to do?
Well, I think it is possible because joint efforts within Russia and China are never attempted if they don't have perspective and background. So this is just a question of time, because moves like this are not made in an instance, and they take a lot of effort, economical, political effort, and they need restructuring some economic processes and economic relations, should I say that. So I'm pretty sure it is possible, and a few countries are working with Russia on the question, and I think within maybe next decade we will see good results.
All right, Dmitry Zolotarev there. Let's continue the conversation with Masoud Abarati, who's here in the studios with us. Masoud, let's continue where we left off. Again, your expertise is sanctions and dollar, so expand more on that for us if you can.
The dollar is the main source or tool at the hands of the U.S. because the dependence of the world banking system is so heavily dependent on the dollar. Big international banks especially need to work with U.S. banking and financial institutions, and they need to touch the dollar. So when this power decreases, the sanction effectiveness and power of the U.S. decreases as well. In other words, the power of this weapon decreases. But how does this happen? On the one hand, the volume of the dollar that are used in financial transactions, if is lessened, then that chips away at the strength of the dollar and the need for the currency. Our discussion is the multilateral financial transactions between countries, including bilateral ones like China, Russia, BRICS countries, Iran. So when bilateral trade increases, like in the case of Iran and Russia, an exchange is done in national currencies, it can decrease the strength of the dollar. Another factor increasing the strength of the dollar is since the dollar ringed as the top currency, other world currencies were converted to the dollar, creating its own market. Yet, for example, if we were to take Korea's money or Europe's euro, that market is not that large. So if other currencies were not converted into the dollar, its power would decrease.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Very good points there. A pleasure, Masoud Abarati, international affairs analyst and sanctions expert. Thank you for joining us here in the studio.
There was a major announcement made recently about a new joint financial architecture between Russia and China. Well, this would be a major breakthrough in many areas, which may explain why sanction-hit countries like Iran are keen on having an economic alliance with these two countries. And yes, it involves de-dollarization. Russia and China said they will develop what they have called shared financial structures. Of course, the stated goal is to deepen their economic ties, but it also cancels out economic influence of any foreign states. Regarding this, Putin's foreign policy advisor said, "We mean creating an infrastructure that cannot be influenced by third countries." Leaders of both countries have also called for bilateral trade using national currencies. Well, in order for something like this to actually happen, there needs to be enough trade between the two countries. Is that the case? Looking at China and Russia's trade volume, here it is evident that their trade has increased significantly in recent years, approaching $200 billion. In another move to steer away from the dollar, the People's Bank of China has been regularly reducing the country's shares of U.S. treasuries. China is still the number one foreign holder of the U.S. sovereign debt, but it has cut its shares to the lowest levels since May 2017. And finally, China has taken away another major spot from the U.S. It has become the largest trading partner with the EU, and that plays a role in the EU moving away from the dollar. Here you can see EU imports and exports. The total value of EU-China trade came in at $709 billion, beating the U.S., which came in at $671 billion. And why is that important? Because the EU, like Russia, China, and Iran, is also keen on steering away from the dollar. The key point here is that the US dollar has been the world's major reserve currency for decades. But that status could come under threat as very powerful countries seek to undermine its importance. China, Russia, and the European Union are some major movers behind this push. And one of those reasons driving their shift away from the dollar is the prospect of being subject to U.S. jurisdiction if they transact in dollars.
So we don't know what's going to come next, but what we do know is that the current situation is unsustainable. You have a growing club of countries, of very powerful countries, and the major movers are China, Russia, the European Union, that have a strong motivation and a stated motivation to de-dollarize. And part of the reason is the use of extraterritorial jurisdiction by the U.S. You're subject to U.S. jurisdiction if you use the dollar.
And that does it for this section. Thank you for following The Economic Divide. From me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next week.
The U.S. dollar dominance has been waning for years. China just recorded $2.6 trillion U.S. dollars in its cumulative turnover of crude oil futures in 2021. Imagine that figure. Now, with Iran signing its mega deal with China and also one with Russia, the Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, is in Russia to cement that 20-year agreement. These countries understand that in order to fully reap the benefits of financial transactions, they need to bond closer together in order to de-dollarize themselves, which they have been doing. And by doing so, they take away the lure of the dollar and its appeal. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you on board. For Mika Vitarve and the entire team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters. 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.